Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. Tonight's conversation is with Richard Mabion. He's the president of the Wyandotte County NAACP and a community activist focused on environmental education and urban renewal. Mabion will discuss how teaching young adults and low-income residents about the environment can empower and employ people and help reclaim and sustain the inner city. Mabion will tell us about the Brownfield to Healthfield EPA program, which provides job training and placement benefits for inner city and low-income residents. This show was recorded on January 28th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show begins with our speaker's presentation, followed by a short break, and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Good morning. Welcome to the forum. My name is Craig Vollen. I'm a member of the forum committee. The forum exists to afford a platform for the discussion of significant issues, especially those which involve ethical values in the contemporary world. This morning, I'm really happy to introduce a good friend of mine that I've worked with for some years now, Richard Mabion. He's president of the Wyandotte County NAACP and a community activist focused on environmental education and urban renewal. He's also on the executive committee of the Kansas Sierra Club. And in the last 5 or 6 years, he's focused on helping provide high-efficient lighting, light bulbs, CFLs, and now LEDs to primarily low-income folks in Kansas City, Kansas, as a way of lowering their bills and also helping climate change. So without further ado, I will introduce Richard Mabion.
Thank you, Craig. Got to make sure I got everything in order. Hello, everyone. I am really glad to be here. And as I was preparing to make my presentation today, I realized when I put this down as my first slide and was getting ready to go into my spiel about where I am now, that I thought it might behoove me to back up and kind of bring everybody up to date on where we've been. I feel like family for you, those of you in here who don't know me. Everything that I've done in this environmental world, All Souls has one way or another been involved with me, either in the planning stages. They provided funding for me at a conference I used to give called Breaking the Silence Conference. They've been speakers. They've had me in here almost on a continuous basis to keep everybody abreast of what it was. I'm out here in the midst of this world doing and make you aware that you got a person like me that even exists. So I'm really glad to, when I was doing this, to know I was going to be coming back in front of family. So instead of you saying hello to me, I'm going to say hello to you. But when I got ready to do this, I immediately realized I needed to back up. I'm horrible with this thing right here, too, so if I go the wrong direction, you'll understand. So I thought I'd back up, because this is the guy that got me here. His name is David Corton. It was he who I brought to my first Breaking the Silence conference. The way he became a fan of mine when I was turned on to his book after 9/11 and was looking for a way to start a new career, and ended up seeing this statement that's up under the book. Leadership to create a world that works for all is more likely to come from those who live in the real world and are consequently are intimately acquainted with the injustice, violence, an environmental failure that the empire has wrought. When I saw that as a civil rights community organizer, and when I call myself a community organizer, I'm talking about a person who used to organize communities as a mission, not as a position, which is what we have now, people who are hired to be community organizers. This was back in the days where you went out with the objective to organize a community, and thank God we did, or I probably wouldn't even be standing here now. that was how we as a civil rights organization in conjunction with white organizations were able to figure out a way to come together and make that thing work. And so that's why it happened. So I went back to him. I saw that, and I knew that if someone didn't get involved, somebody black did not get involved in the environmental world from the inside out, when it came time for that caliber of person to take his position as a person of color, it would be just like everything else we have in this country. They wouldn't be there. Or the ones who would be there would be some hand-picked person who happened to have skin color that was black, and they throw him in there just so they could have him as a somebody to count. So that's what got me. Boy, I see faces around the place. Y'all that know me, hi. I'm seeing you out there, and that's good. So that's what got me started in the movement. And from here, this was in 2006. And from there, I was able to meet David Corton personally and ended up bringing him to Kansas City as my initial speaker for the conference. That's Paul Hawkins up at the top. He got me introduced to Paul Hawkins. If you ever read a book called Blessed Unrest, he had just wrote that book when I met him. The guy at the bottom is John Rissenbrink. He was the co-founder of the Green Party. I got a chance to meet all three of those people, and through then, I was able to go through training with Van Jones, for you CNN people who watch him on TV. I went through his Green for All class. That's Jerome Ringo. He had the Apollo Alliance that's up there at the top, and the lady at the bottom is Major Carter. KCK, Kansas City, Missouri, brought Major Carter to town for in 2008. To deal with the storm drain replacement program. Bob Berkabill and him bought her in. She's out of the Bronx. She did a thing in the Bronx. So I got a chance to meet her not here, but in Memphis the week before at the Martin Luther King's 50th year of his assassination, which was in 68. So I got a chance, in 2008. So I got a chance to meet her there. So when I got here, we act like we was old buddies. This is where I got started over in Kansas City, Missouri. And I'm about to talk fast, y'all, because I don't want to run out of time. But it was so much that I wanted to be able to share with you that I wanted, when I started putting this together, I realized there's a lot I needed to do. We wanted to go over. I found a neighborhood store. When I was in the neighborhood store, I had kids in there with a pocket full of change that was running around buying nothing but junk food. So what I wanted to do was figure out how could I get good food into neighborhood stores. This is a store up on Quindaro. Again, this is 2007. Okay. But what happened is I ran into what the bureaucracy that exists in this country when John Rensenbrink was here. He was, in 2008, 2007, he was supporting one of the Green Party candidates. It was running for attorney general for the state of Missouri, and he put on a fundraiser at Dee Berry's house. I know some of you in here know Dee. I went out to Dee Berry's house, and I got, and Ben Chelsea was very responsible for getting the Green Party to get into the food part of the environmental movement. So I went out to his house, and when I was there at her house, this guy spoke up and said that the environmental movement is the first movement since the civil rights movement that had a chance to change policy in this country. But he hoped that the environmental leaders did not make the same mistake as the civil rights leaders and allow the movement to become a political issue. Needless to say, the environmental movement is a political issue. It's stuck on stupid in D.C., trying to figure out what's right or wrong. You still got deniers. You still got this. You still got that. So that's what he was warning back then. When I got ready to deal with the yard out there, with the garden to bring good food to neighborhood stores, which, by the way, they haven't got there yet, I ran into that political issue. And the organizations, your environmental organizations, are also hung up on the political issue. So we decided to do it on our own. I found a building, turned it into my hub for my Breaking the Silence of Building a Sustainable Earth Community Group. And those are some of your, that's some also folks sitting up in there. And I'm going to tell you this, I'm really excited about this. See this picture, we turned it into an Obama rally spot, okay? See the little young kid that's there, the black kid? He grew up from here, went to Barstow, and last week enrolled in second semester at a college in Paris. We as a community was able to give him an opportunity. He spoke highly of Obama, and he spoke like a little champion. And last week, his grandmother called me. They put him on a plane, and he's starting a college in Paris. And that is just, come on, you got to give us some credit for where we've been going with this, okay? From here, after we got what I like to call community, which is a motley-looking group of people up there on the right-hand side, the best thing you got to do once you get a community form is figure out some way or something for that community to do. I went into Wyandotte High School, and is that Steve Mann I see back there? Yeah, I thought it was. It looks like him. But anyhow, we went into Wyandotte High School, Steve Mann and I, and we ended up going in, and we found that piece of land up there at the top that was going to waste. We went down and introduced them to a no-till garden. We used it as a demonstration platform. And that little piece of land that you see over on the right, it went from that upper picture in 2008 to that lower picture in 2010. Right now, it is so beautiful, green, that when you go there and look out the window from a classroom, it's 10 times darker than what you see there right now. They got fruit trees out there. They turned that empty spot up there into a work of art, a work of art. Okay. Going on. Well, that's when the bureaucracy and school system showed up. In that upper picture on the right, we were going to move the teacher science department from the school to an 8-acre garden. The next year, found out they don't have transportation to get the kids or the teachers there. They wouldn't let the teachers go there during school. They had to do it after school. They don't get paid for working after school. They had to do it on weekend. Thereby, the program went belly up. So then we went with a private school with the Muslims, and they came out. This is when they were over in Kansas City, Kansas. And they were able to come out, and they got hooked up with the farmer. And you got them planting seeds. You got them watching. This picture on the left-hand lower side is priceless. To see those kids come out there and see what they had planted a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks before, growing, to see their look on their face, it's an experience that they will be telling their grandchildren about when they walked out there and had a chance to see that food growing. This young lady at the top, she had a chance to see how cauliflower grows out of the middle of a plant. I didn't know it either, so we all were staring at it. It was a good sight. This, we taught them how to do it, but then David Lawrence, he's another one of the fellas that hang out over here, started an organic farmer's market out in Shawnee every Tuesday. So we were able to get a booth, and we hooked up those kids and had them hook up with Catherine Kelly and Cultivate KC. And Catherine and her person she's working with in Daniel was able to show the kids how to, we would teach them how to plant, harvest, and cultivate and harvest the food. They taught them how to pick the food and prepare it for sale at a farmer's market. And that's what you see at that market there that was out there in Shawnee. In other words, we were providing these youngsters with that total food production experience, which is needed. Reason, I'm a 60 person. I told you, civil rights person. We had a United Way back then. If you proved to them that you had a program that would work for a year, they would pick that program up and make it part of their annual funding process. I'm still waiting for somebody to make sure that they can prove to folks that this stuff that we're showing them will work, because that's the only way we're going to be able to get our future generations educated like they need to be. The second thing, and you're going to always see Craig Bollin somewhere around me. This was before I became a Sierra Club member. We put on a thing that's called Tricks in the Hood. If you look it up on Pitch Magazine, it'll come up and they'll talk about it. And what we did is had one of those lowrider groups come over there on the streets. We had the streets blocked off for 5 blocks. We had the band, the city gave us a stage. We had a band playing, and we came up there. And inside this joint, my little place where I had my hub, we had people from all over Kansas City, Kansas, and Missouri. Some members of this organization here gave us candy and stuff to give away. The reason, we had heard that the young people in the inner city were getting their utilities cut off at an alarming rate. And we realized that a lot of them didn't have fathers and grandfathers in the home like I had growing up, that I could watch them prepare my house for the winter. So what we wanted to do was get those people to us one way or another. So those cars were designed to get the 18 to 25-year-old boys. The candy was designed on Halloween to get the 18 to 25-year-old females. And once we got them inside, we just flooded them with information about saving money and how you can do what you can do at your home to make your home work and blah, da, 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 da. And that's what this program was about. Was it a success? I think so. Then we started in 2010. I was October 2009, teaching environmental literacy. I went to a conference in D.C., and that was what we were supposed to come back home and do. So I came back to Kansas City, and I started doing this environmental literacy stuff. And literally, I have talked my head off, not that that's a problem for me, to almost every living group of people that you got in this daggum town. I've been in neighborhood groups. I've been in schools. I've been in storefronts. I've been in you name it. I've been there. Topeka. We started a radio station. This picture is very significant on the end because I would go to black organizations. This was Black Expo to talk to parents about the need for them to teach their children to love science and technology. Because if those young kids don't learn to love science and technology, when they grow up in the world we're starting to have, they will be unemployable, regardless of what you may think. So that's been my number one concern, is to get out there to do that. I'll stop every now and then and get on my soapbox. Then we went to the next level. Up at the top is the regional administrator for EPA. We had that root meeting set up. I had a chance to get them set up with neighborhood leaders. That's neighborhood leaders talking to EPA leadership about what are you planning to do in my neighborhood, something that they don't normally get a chance to do. They still don't do that stuff. The rest of those shots are different shots about us engaging people. I even engaged the environmental community in EPA, and that's what that one shot is at the bottom. You can even see the horseshoe meeting that we had with the community as the topic that's on the screen board, showing them what we had done in Kansas City, saying this is what you need to be able to do in other cities. And down at the bottom is Argentina, where we were getting ready to meet with EPA and neighborhood leaders and workers who were getting ready to engage in an air monitoring program against Santa Fe. Then, after all that, what we started doing was going into school at the Flint to start teaching high school students how to scientifically test water. I was able to develop a partnership with Riverkeepers through Friends of the Call. They got a grant with EPA. They don't give black people grants with EPA, so I had to go through a white organization to get a grant, thank God. We got the grant. We're teaching kids how to scientifically test water. And once those high school students learn, we hire 10 of them, pay them $15 an hour, and we'll take them out and have them show elementary school kids how to scientifically test water, middle school students how to scientifically test water. And those pictures at the bottom are members of my NAACP membership that are learning how to scientifically test water. Once we got them and other volunteers who had came in to learn how to scientifically test water, we took them into Argentine Middle School and had them, some of them volunteer to work with the Riverkeepers when they was teaching seventh graders how to scientifically test water. We're making it a community-based concern. Community-based concern. Individual responsibility. How many glasses of water would you have had your kids drink if you lived in Flint? Everybody said, none. How many baths would you have had your kid take if you lived in Flint? None. I'd never put my kid in no water, especially as a person of color. The water looked like the color of my hand. But then I'll say, but for 2 years, the mothers, fathers, grandparents, uncles, brothers and sisters gave those kids that water and bathed those kids in that water for 2 years. And everybody goes, well, they didn't know what to do. Well, look, somewhere while we got groups out here, Sierra Club and everybody else, this EPA that's fighting with those public officials, try to figure out a way to send them to jail or at least get them out of office, fine. But at the same time, we need to be making sure we're dealing with individual responsibility. And that comes from educating the people themselves to know, I got a problem here. I can't put this in my baby, you know? So that is what this is. And so we got the kids out and teach them how to do that. Now, then that's the way that session went. Now, we're back to my original picture. Because now what I've decided to do that's needed is an economic development package, and found out that EPA has a program that's called Brownfield Job Training Program. And I am actively engaged from here to D.C. to L.A. of getting that program, trying to get that program here to Kansas City. This is a piece of land that I'm trying to use. It's located over there by 3rd Street, right across the street from the EPA laboratory. It's the perfect place. It deals with good movement. My thing says how to use electronic development as a job training program to teach skills and provide means to gain experience for the portion of the population that is unemployed or underemployed due to a lack of employable skills or experience, that are also most affected by the potential carcinogen. Diesel fuel is a carcinogen. It can cause cancer and can kill. That can be a result of good movements in this country. Now, if you got a kid riding down a car, riding down US 71 with his daddy and two nut buckets run by and shoot at each other and the kid gets killed, everybody is shameful. Everybody wants to do something. But if you got a highway system, a rail system, a river system, where carcinogens are an everyday factor affecting the young lungs of our children and our elderly, I would think that somebody ought to do something there too. No one is, but we're starting that. Okay, this is what I want to build on that. This is what I made an offer to build on that. They call me a developer now. I have nobody to do. I'm a community organizer, and I'm just showing what could happen. This is a passive apartment complex. It's what they're building down the City Market. We want to build that because I need a place for my young millennial urban inner city college graduates to live. As it is now, they graduate from the high schools in Wyandotte County to go off to college. I'm not talking about Harvard and Notre Dame. I'm talking about Kansas Wesleyan. They get a degree in graphic arts. They come back to Kansas City and get a job at Hallmark Cards. They're making a pretty decent salary. Minimum wage in here, the lowest wage in here is going to be $1,700 a month. We want what they got downtown. We're trying to provide a place that we can bring businesses in, that we can have people who can afford to partake of, to get the nails and the toes done and the hair done and buy from the shops and the restaurants and the different things. We plan on setting it up in such a way that this is how we look inside. That's food growing on the window. The kids staying there are not going to be doing it. That's going to create jobs for other folks. They just want to be able to call their friends and say, come on down, I'm going to show you how to get me a salad off the wall. Like they say, in other words, it's hipped. It's going to be a cool place to live. And then we're going to put an aquaponic and a hydroponic system inside. Now, they're growing those things, but they look like farms. Inner city people aren't attracted to farms, but they could be attracted to something that was inside. Outside this shot that's on the bottom left, you see a mall. Outside there, we plan on having a farmer's market. We plan on having coffee houses. We plan on having restaurants of all ethnic groups. This is what I have been assigned TAB group from K-State, which is the Technical Assistance Brownfield Organization. These are their words. With Kansas City, Kansas having such a wide range of cultural diversity, it seems as if this could be a strong point for a multicultural redevelopment strategy. Perhaps by focusing a section of the redevelopment on an ethnic, cultural, diverse activity. This could result in an area becoming the destination point for tourists. Because, see, when we train our people, we're not just training them to go get a job with Mr. Harry. We're training them to learn a skill that can turn into a way to be able to create potential tourist activity. Because when you got tourists coming in, you got money coming in. So this is a way of creating for tourists and residents They want to experience culinary or other cultural points of interest. There is a very competent city market development in Kansas City, Missouri. Perhaps this concept could be imported to Kansas City, Kansas, and be a strong ethnic culture flavor too. That goes along with my presentation that I'm making all over the country on that passive building that's being built. This is another thing that I'm using because the section of the road that goes under those highways can be turned into green space. So I'm saying, we got these people going through training. Let's get them trained to do this. Because, see, I don't want Dunn's, whatever them developing companies are, Jay Dunn, to hire a person called a black female or white or low income or Native or Latino. I want them to hire them because they're good at what they do. So we teach people to have this skill that makes it marketable. See, and we need people to grab these skills so that my K through 12 can see them being able to succeed at what they got, so they'll be motivated to do it too. It's a total package, community organizing, remember that. We also add two more additional health things in there. We're gonna see an activity like having the motorbikes for rent. We got that bridge that goes across from Kansas City, Kansas now over to Kansas City, Missouri. We're gonna try to connect our millennials with the millennials over in Kansas City, Missouri. When I made my presentation, excuse me, but y'all wine lottery going on out there. But when I made my presentation up in Pittsburgh here last month, I told them, if you wanna get drunk, you got plenty of places in Kansas City, Missouri, you go get drunk. But what Kansas City, Kansas is gonna do, we're gonna be family friendly. I don't mind having a Michael Brewery over there because they concentrate more on selling food than they do getting you drunk. But we want a place that our young people can get up and go out and enjoy themselves and go home. And we want a place that we can go and enjoy ourselves and go home. And Kansas City, Kansas is a place to do it. I might be done here. Oh, this is going back to the grain silo. The number one ask that I had when I make my presentation is the city has already said they'll take over the control of this grain elevator so we can use that property. But they won't do it until we figure out how to get it down. You know, some estimates it could be $1 million due to them the other day, it could be $10 million. But there is money out there, and we have to find organizations that have the kind of money and send it my way, or at least call me. We want to be able, that's my number one ask, is to get that grain elevator down. It's an eyesore, it's blight. But we use it as a separate but equal economy to teach the unemployed, the underemployed, low income, unskilled workers the kind of skills they'll need in life in a situation where you can mess up, like drop a tool on the ground or something, because you're learning. We have to go in and revamp all this training money that's floating around here, paying people to have a building to go to every day. And put that money somewhere where it can be actually teaching the low-income something. Because, see, I got people dying and going to hell out here on the streets. And while the system is saying it's okay, we got a 2-point unemployment record, my community's going, we're living in peril. And so we need to be able to hear a voice that's coming from within. When I just taught my last class with the, and I'm teaching it right now, with the high school students, we have hired 4 from Wyandotte and 4 from Harmon, and we're getting them ready to go on KKFI, and then they'll teach some, probably my NAACP members again. In one of my classes, I took this and talked to them about it. It was amazing the reaction and response I got from those kids. The teacher came up and said, I've never seen them have that kind of attention. One, they got a neighborhood person, somebody look like them. You know, not a lot of us in school, especially black males, especially look like me, especially act like me. Cool. So the kids can identify with me. And I'm talking to them about, in 20 years, this person, this thing, will be teaching you like I am. See, that's a reality that made me go back to this. When I was talking to those parents about what they needed to prepare their kids for, that was in 2010 or something like that. It's real. That robot is real. It's on the way. Okay, I think that's it, gang. I got a little time for questions. Yes. Oh, yeah, I did good, y'all. I did good. I got time for questions.
We're now going to have questions and answers. And remember, the rules are that you get to ask one question until everybody has a chance and there's no speeches. And also, Richard's going to be available to stay here for another half hour or so in the meeting room for further discussion, and then you can make speeches. So I'll hand it back to Richard. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to ask for your advice.
I want y'all to know this when my homeboy's here. You know, we interact with each other. So
I'm
scared.
Richard and I have been crossing paths in Wyandotte County for some time. So here's my question. The thing that I've learned in the 5 or 6 years that I've been hanging around Wyandotte County is that, one, it is a genuine melting pot of white people, brown people, and black people. The overall condition, at least in the eastern part of the county, is such that virtually everybody who lives there has a need to work on the problems you're talking about. So my advice question is for a person like myself coming from Johnson County who's looking to be helpful, if that's even the right term, what have you learned about the interface between the black, brown, and white in eastern Wyandotte and how that can be approached?
Okay. It's not pretty. Okay, first of all, you have to be in a position to make everyone know. Don't tell me what has worked, because as far as I'm concerned, it's all failed. Two, you can't give me 6 weeks of training and put me on a job without dealing with my I ams. We need to, as Romans 12 says, we need to it's almost like reinvent the wheel. We need a changing of the mind. And we need to deal that with our K-12. Through the help of a lot of people, I put together what's called a 50-year pathway out of poverty plan. Now, I've shared this with various institutions to include Federal Reserve in San Francisco, the ones who wrote the book on wealth. And the lady wrote back and said, I don't know anything about Brownfield, but I think your 50-year plan probably is off the hook. I really like the way you section it together. I have K-12 is one part. The next part is 16 to 24, disconnected workers. That's the group the youth bill works with. That disconnected workers have to have a separate kind of program that we're dealing with them on. It's all headed in the same direction. And then I have the 25 to 50-year-old. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the infrastructure work that needs to be done in this country is probably the last opportunity that these guys who have failed in life are going to have to be productive citizens. Burns and McDonald's got a 25-year storm drain replacement contract for both Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. I've already talked to them and said, hey, look, if I take 5 years to bring this unskilled, unlearned person, male, female, up to a point that they are productive and capable of working for your company, would you consider hiring them? And by all means, they said yes. So the conditions are out there. You say, okay, let's do. I'm just now becoming a silo-minded person, because I've had to, in putting this together, we have too many silos. You heard me mention the one about job training folks out here that got an office, they got a bunch of people working in it, and they get big time money, $4-some million a year from the Department of Labor, and they use that money to keep their doors open. They're not getting our people trained and on a job to be sustainable. So why don't we find a way to come together as a community, as a city? I'm shooting for city to be able to make that presentation out. As far as I'm concerned, it should be city-state. I'm shooting for city-state in Kansas to represent what we're trying to do here because of the way of being able to see that it has a value. The agriculture, Secretary of Agriculture is trying to put in an aquaponic and a hydroponic system in Kansas right now. They've already heard and we've already talked. This might be a place for them to combine their efforts. We have to begin to make those silos all work off one agenda and not everybody running around thinking that my agenda is the one that's going to make a difference. We as a community are losing. We as a community are suffering. So we need to, as a community, make sure that's known. And then I see people all over this place that I know would just line up to be a part of it because it makes sense. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you could tell people about the efforts you've been involved in with regard to the air quality in Argentina and the whole citizen scientist thing. And maybe okay.
You heard me say that we have this carcinogen problem. I'll name it off like this. Warren Buffett, genius of a man, I'm not mad at him, figured out a way that he could make more money and at the same time save L.A. and Long Beach some clean air problems. So he went out and he negotiated a deal with them in China that no longer will China overload their products onto the shores of L.A. and Long Beach. They are now offloading their products, the container cars, when they come in on the ships, to his trains. Then his trains are bringing those products to Kansas, out in Edgerton, Kansas. Now, we're totally unaware of that, totally don't know about it. And what Mike is talking about, we went out in Argentina and started educating those people what was going on because they don't know about it. They don't know about carcinogen. They don't know about diesel fuel and the things that it can do. So we went out and started doing that. So now we have found that because of them locating that intermodal out here in Edgerton, the truck traffic in the Kansas City metropolitan area is getting ready to increase to 20,000 to 30,000 trucks a day. 20,000 to 30,000 trucks a day. This program that Craig and I are working on, we did a monitoring at one location that showed that if an elderly person had inhaled the air the night before, they would either have been sick for 2 weeks or dead. Now that's how serious it is. And right now, only we are speaking to it because the people who we're speaking to it about or Burlington Northern Railroad. They got deep, deep pockets. Yes, sir.
Okay, somewhat related to the question that you were addressing is the issue of the fumes that come from that rail yard. You mentioned early in your presentation some monitoring, and occasionally on the news it shows up that people have been monitoring the pollution levels near the rail yard.
Yes.
Do you have any up-to-date information about what's going on with that? And is the railroad doing anything to use equipment that produces less fumes?
Well, the railroad is in Kansas City is under the leadership of Warren Buffett. Need I say more? So to answer your question about the railroad, nothing. They are pretty much saying that everything they're doing is within guidelines. But as far as us, we are expanding that program. We're looking for funding. Of course, we're looking for funding. The Sierra Club has kicked in some money now. And so that's what we're operating off right now is Sierra Club. And we're doing a project up in Lawrence. We're doing a project in Armadale, which is around rail yards. And we're trying to get one started over there in the 3rd Street area in Kansas City, Kansas. So we're working on it. In fact, Craig just told me this morning we're working on a time with a guy that has a building there that we're going to get in to set up our monitor so that we can monitor the air from there. But, yes, we're doing it. They have a place.
Tell them about EPA coming in with that study.
Yeah, well, EPA's got a study they're bringing in, too. They got a car they're driving around town now. They're supposed to be checking the air and monitoring it. We feel good because they were doing nothing before we started. So we feel like because of us, we got some attention going their way, and that's a good thing. They have a bench. Air monitoring bench they put in front of the library out in Argentine. Argentine's your number one spot because that's where the headquarters of the Santa Fe Railroad is. That's the turn signal. That's where they turn around. So they get a lot of diesel issues down there. So it's a good place. We have found that the machine shop where they work on the engines is probably the most powerful place for that diesel fuel to be seen. Yes. One other thing I was going to throw in, Craig mentioned, I'm going to talk about it in the little room. Craig mentioned it, that we are, you know, the Sierra Club is doing what we can to help teach people about the environment, environmental issues. So we look for ways to get in the door. I'm a backdoor diplomat. I get in your door and sitting at your table drinking coffee before you know why I'm there. And then when you find out why I'm there, I start talking about stuff. Well, these lights are our way of getting into people's homes. So we got us a little contract set up where we go around to elderly's homes and we're installing these LED bulbs. We done the inside. Now we're doing the outside. And we're putting LED bulbs on their outdoor lighting. You got some that are wet, some that are damp, and we got the ones that go on the front porch. The reason being, these are 75-watt bulbs that only use up 9 watts of energy. So we want to be able to show people how you can save money. We're making people save money. And the other thing, and again, I'll talk about it when I get in my room, this is my back cot. You know, we have community gardens. Well, I have a relationship with Hilt Garden Inn on 5th Minnesota. And we've had middle school kids to come out and build them 3 raised beds, and we've been growing food over there for 3 years. And I pass the food out to the elderly through the NAACP. Well, this year, because of all the negativity that's going on with racial stuff, our young people are being made to believe that black people haven't made no advancements in this country, and I refuse to allow that to come out of my lips. So I went over and grew cotton. One of my farmers, the one that was on there, I grew 10 cotton plants, and I had so much cotton that people fell in love with it. They was coming from everywhere they could to see cotton growing. People my age had never seen it grow. Other ones had never touched it. And they came over and was grabbing it. My people in my church, I gave them all a piece of cotton to take it home. So, and the reason that I was doing it, so they could go to their grandchildren and their children and say, this is the reason they bought us here. And now we have overcome so far. We got a black dude named Richard that's growing it for fun at the Hilton Garden Inn. The Hilton Garden Inn is elated to be able to represent that. And that's what we as people need to be able to do. This is our fight, people. This is not a government fight. This is our fight. We just need to have a better leader. We don't need to be out there. I'm not bowing down on my knees to tell nobody about nothing about what cops are doing to these criminals that's running around the street scaring folks. But I will be out there talking about how we can get people trained and make them productive citizens at home. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Don't get me started. Go ahead, sir.
No, you're doing great. About 3 or 4 years ago when they were putting in the streetcar line downtown, I wrote a note to the Star that was published suggesting that the streetcar line could be powered by wind turbines that were in the Missouri River Basin. Now, that was never followed up by anybody, and it may have been an impractical idea. But I wonder what you think about the future in the region here, especially in KCK and places like that, of solar and wind power.
It's a done deal. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's a done deal. That's why our kids better learn about electronics and science, because that's what kind of world we're going to live in. Missouri right now is buying into some daggum windmill farm that's going in, and they're going to find service for 100,000 customers with this one wind farm. It's being run by a company in Lenexa, but it's being built by a company over here in Missouri somewhere. It's coming. It cometh. And we might as well go ahead and get ready for it. Your suggestion was on the one. But we don't have the kind of leadership, excuse me, loving to death, but we don't have the kind of leadership that is environmental minded. That's how new it is. So we have to prepare our future generations so when they get those spots and they get elected as mayor or they get elected as commissioner, that they will feel differently about the environmental renewable energy programs than the ones we have in there now. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, thank you so much for speaking today. So what you talk about has a lot to do with education, like educating communities. And, you know, you talked about knowledge, knowing about safety. So it kind of seems to me that to be kind of a good citizen, right, you have to kind of have this fundamental base knowledge of how your city works, what's healthy in it, and such like that. Are you partnering to get that word out with any of the community colleges or universities? Because it seems like a big task. Like you said, you have to talk your head off most of the time, you know. And so, yeah. So
yes, yes, I am. And all those things, all those above, yes. I've spoken at colleges. One of the pictures, I was speaking at Bethel College down here in Kansas. I've spoken at Tulsa University, Tulsa Community College. I've been at college. I've been at KU. I'm speaking at K-State. I'm engaged in them. Here's the issue now with your education institution. And again, this is going to have to come from alumni. But in that particular case, if I get a grant with an education institution, 80% of it has to go to the institution, which leaves no money for the neighborhood. Okay? That's the issues we got going. But yes, I'm out here knocking on doors. I knock on doors and my skin is raw. But am I having any success? Look, I wouldn't have been making that presentation in Pittsburgh if I wasn't having some success. I wouldn't be standing up here now talking about developing a separate but equal economy if I wasn't having some success. In fact, to give you the caliber of success that I'm having, the number two man in EPA, name is Albert Kelly. When I met him in Pittsburgh, agreed to come visit me in Kansas City, Kansas. He didn't come visit Region 7. He's coming to visit Richard in Kansas City, Kansas, so that he can see this project that I'm talking about them being able to do. That's God. I don't know how y'all are in here that would make something like that possible. But that man is coming. In fact, he was supposed to be here tomorrow. We got a little wrinkle and it's been delayed, but he's still coming. So when I talked to him, when I was in Pittsburgh, none of these grants have money for education. None of these grants have money for organization, for organizing. What I'm doing, the grants don't have money for that. So we have to figure out, or they have to figure out, a way to make that a known interest. But you got to have somebody show that it's needed first. Right now, organizations are running around from Kellogg's to Kresge's to all these other organizations who are getting all the money saying, we can do it. Bring it to us. We can do it.
In this project, who here has been to Caw Point? Well, quite a few people. I think... you might talk a little bit more about how your project, when you're talking about bringing in tourists, already has that capacity because Caw Point provides such a beautiful view of the city, and it's right there next to the what's going on in Missouri.
Yeah, when we had the kids do the test of water from Wyandotte High School, we took them down to the river by Caw Point. That's where the confluence is of the Missouri and the Kansas River. Not only is it a pretty place to look, it's a very historical place. And they have been wanting to do something with it, but when you have a project like that in a city like you were just talking about, Bill, where everybody has their own agendas and cities are broke and don't want to spend money and all that kind of stuff, you're begging. You're literally begging for funding. And that is what's preventing a lot of this stuff from happening. When Craig, who I would never do anything without Craig, he's my scientist, went over to see my buildings. He won't say that, but he is. Went over to look over this building that I want to put in, their silo and stuff. The first thing he came back with is two things. One, whatever you build has got to have amenities because there's no amenities around. Okay. The second one, you need to put a restaurant in the top of it. So it looks out over the Missouri River and the confluence, and that will bring people in. See, it's all about a different way. If you're going to create a sustainable earth community, the entities that you build need to be able to build and create their own income. So you're not continuously running back to the dough for a grant for this to do it again. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Do you see any future in local self-reliance by developing industries that would recycle our waste? Recently, New York Times had an article about China is going to stop taking our recyclable materials. It looks to me like that might be an opportunity for local sustainability.
Yeah, I agree. I am on the task force for the waste management team. You know, they always like to need a black face, so they grab Richard. And I agree with you. There is a need for more education in the waste management field. When you talk about education, that's a good area for our young people coming up. I mean, it's gritty work. It's kind of work that they like to do, that millennial group get involved with it. You had a white guy out in Overland Park that started picking up glass, and he's doing it on his own. So he's going around, and he's charging people something like $10 a month. And he picks up the glass from your house, I think, twice a month. There's no one picking up glass, people. There's no recycle for glass in this town. They got them picking it up from different places. What's the name of the Ripple Glass? And they're selling it down there to certain T's. But I'm saying, here we are with an unemployment problem. Some of these nut buckets who didn't decide to learn nothing when they was in school, we could probably teach them how to recycle for glass and keep them from hitting somebody in the head for a hamburger. If they were able, just like they used to do with paper, you store it up and take it down and sell it, so like you do at a junkyard, we have to create that need. But I agree with you. We have to start recycling our stuff, man. We can't keep throwing it away. I see it. I harp this in my waste management meeting, the recycle trucks east of 635 can ride for 30 blocks with no recycle can. None. And everybody knows it, but nobody's doing anything because now here we go back to the 60s. My first environmental position community organizing position was citizen participation specialist. Citizen participation specialist. My job was to go knock on doors, introduce myself, tell folks where I was, who I was working for, and what we were going to be doing in your neighborhood. We have never done that in the environmental movement. People don't know why we recycle. Do you know poor people think that the city came up with recycling because they found a new way to make some money because they charge you $1.80 a month for recycling? If you add up 500,000 people at $1.80 a month, you think the city got it going on. That is the mentality that a person like myself needs to have someone addressing, whether it's in the school. Okay, when I'm teaching my little class with the kids, I say, how many of y'all family, mom and dad, recycle? You'd be surprised how few hands go up. This is black and Latinos, mostly in Wyandotte County, because no one's told them why. So I'm saying, yes, we need to be able to get the folks and be able to do that with them. Anyone else? This has been fun, y'all. I really appreciate it. You know, this is my home. Y'all my family.
Thank you, Richard. That was great. And in appreciation for your coming over here is your All Souls UU Forum mug.
Yes.
Right?
You know, I've just found out it's been 6 years since I've been here because I've got a new senior pastor and I didn't know it. Don't let it go that long.
Next week, it'll be the truth about voter suppression. This is a lady from the ACLU, Sarah Baker, so be sure and catch that. And Richard's going to be available to talk further, or you can come and comment and offer him suggestions in the meeting room after the forum.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, From Urban Site Renewal to Good Jobs, with Richard Mabian. This program was recorded on Sunday, January 28th at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.